Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night. Good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Why am I laughing? Because I accidentally clicked the opening sound, so that's why we heard it twice. Oh, my God. I told you this show was going to be really serious, didn't I? Tonight, I am delighted. I have a guest that, oh my God, I love her with all my heart. I love her even more now that I've read her latest book, and we're going to talk all about that. But let me introduce her as she deserves. Byron Ballard is a teacher, folklorist, and writer who was born and raised in Western North Carolina. She has served as a feature presenter at Sacred Space Conference, Southeast Wise Women, Herbal Conference, Glastonbury Goddess Conference, and has spoken at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. Ballard is a senior priestess and co-founder of the Mother Grove Goddess Temple and the Coalition of Earth Religious for Education and Support series. She writes a regular column for Sage Woman magazine, and is the author of four previous books, including Stubbs and Ditchwater. Ballard lives in Asheville, North Carolina. And to learn more about her work, you can visit www.myvillagewitch.com. It is my honor also to call her my friend. Bon, bon, bon. Here she is, Byron Ballard. How are you?
Oh, I am very well. How are you? It is so good to talk to you again. It's been so long.
It has been too long.
And I'm so glad to be here.
You know, people don't understand that we love each other. We met, not necessarily on that order, and then we talk, and then we have a show. And then each one of us goes do her thing, and then it takes years to reconnect. So don't tell anybody, Byron, but this is like you and I having coffee and just catching up. And it just
absolutely
happens to be in a podcast that everybody's going to listen to.
I have been doing so much teaching online in the past year during the plague year. And I found that I'm doing a lot of Zoom meetings in my kitchen. So I'll start a class by saying, hi, you're in my kitchen with me, and those are my dirty dishes behind me because I didn't have time to wash them before class. And also there's coffee, and the kettle is on. So please get a cup of coffee or make a cup of tea and sit down because now you're in my kitchen with me. And I love it. I mean, I wish my kitchen was big enough for, you know, all these hundreds of people to be in my kitchen. I would love that.
So every single one of you who is listening right now, you need to get the book. So not only you get the visual that Byron just shared with us right now, but then you get a visual of everything that surrounds her. And it's just wonderful. It's just beautiful. First of all, yes, let's talk about Tower Times and Plague. Did you have that in mind when you spoke about Tower Times, Miss?
Yes. So let's give the listeners a little backstory that in 2018, I published a book called Earthworks, Ceremonies in Palatine. And that book is about, okay, given who your audience is and knowing who you are, who I love, I'm going to say it just the way it is. I had a vision. I just had a vision. And it was a waking vision. So I wasn't asleep and woke up and had this thing. It was a waking vision. And in this vision, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that we were stepping into these times that were going to be cataclysmic. And I call them Tower Time because I've been reading tarot for 50 years, easy 50 years. And so I call it Tower Time. And I believe that all top-down systems, all hierarchical systems, we are again at a place where those things are collapsing. And it is incumbent on all of us to create the new systems before these systems collapse. Because again and again in our histories, we've had moments where it would have been possible to make a new world and to not do everything from the top down the way these systems are designed. And every time we go, oh, no, but that guy at the top of the pyramid, oh, he sucked. But we're going to get this really cool guy, and we're going to put him at the top, and everything's going to be fine. But the reality is it's the system that's the problem. It's the series of systems, and everything is arranged like that. So healthcare, whoa, don't we know it's collapsed and collapsing. Education, religion, government, you name it. If it's a big system, it's doing this collapse, and then it will stop and recalibrate and try to regain momentum and then crash a little bit more and a little bit more. So that's what Tower Time is all about, is about looking around and going, how the heck do we get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are. It's just where we are right now. And the book is, half of it is essays about what I think is going on, and the other half is how to ritualize what's happening and make meaning out of it.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned earlier, the audience and who they are and how you can speak so freely about Tower Times, what you don't know, or I'm sure you're aware because we talk about this last you were here, I keep referring to you and the Tower Times because I keep telling folks, I think we are kind of like in between the devil and the tower. I don't think we're quite yet on the tower. And then when 2020 rolled in, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to shut up now. You know? I'm like, I think we reached tower. And you know that meme with the person with the finger, like trying to talk? And yeah, no, I'm just going to be quiet. Because it was quite the progression, you know. It all started like in this, like 2015, 2016. And we had like a lived nightmare of 4 years. And, you know, for people that look like me, it was fear for our lives every day since, and we thought it was over, and we were about to get a sigh of relief, and then the capital things happened, and now it's our nightmare is real, the Nine of Swords, thank you very much. It's like, okay.
Yes.
You know, it really has been quite an adventure, so it is soothing to have a book that actually talks about things that are a lot lighter and so beautiful. This book, I have in my hands right here. I have it on my hands, folks. Roots, Branches, and Spirits. I have to tell you, Byron, like I told you behind the scenes, this is a love letter to the land in which you were born. And it's such a beautiful book. Everybody, whether you are familiar with the Appalachia or not, you need to read this book. It's just beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It is a love letter. I mean, my family has been here a long, long time. I'm good friends with a naturopathic doctor named Jody Knowing, who is Cherokee. And when we first met, we were goofing around, talking, and she said, well, how long have your people been here? And I said, well, on one side of my family, I've been here since the 1500s. And she went, girl, you've been here almost as long as we've been here. I said, yeah, mm-hmm. well, yeah, I guess. But, yeah, a long time. I say I've got really deep, gnarly roots here, hard to pull out, hard to go away, hard to stay away. Anyway, I go away all the time. I do a lot of touring when we're not having a plague year. Mm-hmm. But yes, thank you. It is a love song to my region. And honestly, the older I get, because I began my religious life as a Wiccan, as a lot of people did my age, because there wasn't much else in the way of nature-based religions. Mm-hmm. But the older I get, the less religion I have, and the more I'm just an animist. I just think everything has a soul, and mm-hmm. everything is worthy of love and respect. Everything. Rocks and moss and people and animals and all of it. All of it. Mm-hmm. I don't see a whole lot of difference. Except that we are really crappy as a species. And humans can be really, really crappy.
I think the problem with humans is we forgot that we're animals. And we are animals.
Absolutely.
We have animal desires. We have animal urges. We just happen to socialize different from other animals because we have a spoken language, or maybe we understand our language, because who says within animals they don't understand, they understand their own language. I don't know. There's just something that makes us different from other animals, but we are animals. And mm-hmm. we have thought that we are high and mighty, bigger and better than all of the other species, and we're not. And that's why we are in this conundrum that we are right now, you know, that yeah. it has a lot to do with yeah. that human superiority over other species, you know. And not just the nature, the eco-activism, but also like the species and how we treat other species and how we treat the earth herself. Or itself, or himself, or whatever you call it. You know, it has a lot to do with that. We forgot.
And how we tend to other each other so that we other people about their skin tone or their culture or their ability. And by othering them, we say, well, we are not like that. We're superior to that. And so we do that about everything. We even do it to each other. And by we, that's a very general thing to say. There are so many good, amazing, golden-hearted people in the world that are doing kind and compassionate work. So I don't want to paint us all with the same brush of cruelty and malice, but there is a lot of cruelty and malice, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. And people forget that is the luck of the draw where we are born, right? I mean, proof and point is like this book, your family, your folks came from other lands and other folks came from other lands. And it doesn't, I mean, how do you know where your seed is going to end up? The wind will take it and then it will end up elsewhere. And the skin color is 3 millimeters deep. For those who are a metric challenge, it is an eighth of an inch deep. You know, it's an eighth of an inch. That's what all this worth and differences and othering and reading the book about the Appalachia and the people and the folk magic and the traditions. And I'm like, we're the same. We have slight differences and we have different folk practices, but I was, you know, every little thing that you, oh, yeah, we do it like that. Oh, you guys do it like this? We do it like that. And every other step in the book, I was like, we do something very similar to this, you know, and we, you know, like the words and this and the herbs and even the folk tales of ghost stories. And it's like, if we just were to talk to each other, we will find out that, you know what, we are not that different.
Exactly. Well, it's been several years ago now, but I'm good friends with a man who is now retired, a Catholic priest. And he called me one day and he said, I've got this problem, and I think I need your help with it. So it turned out one of his parishioners was from Colombia, and she had some spiritual issues that he could not fix as a Catholic priest. And he said, she really needs somebody like you. And I said, ah, she needs a curandera.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what she needs. Well, my Spanish is limited. I mean, it's better now than it was, but by then it was very limited. So he came, and he sat on a bench between us, and he translated for each of us. It was the dearest thing. But when I took out my little basket of stuff, and I was hearing her story, and it was a family issue that she wanted to have healed and resolved and put to bed, and I took out a raw egg, and I took out some red thread, and she looked over, and her eyes lit up, and she spoke to him, and he said that I was just like the little granny woman in her village, and I had the right things. So evidently the red thread and the egg were the perfect thing. But it just shows just what you were saying, that so many of these folk ways are human ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get some cultural laid on top of it, because we all should be, I think, steeped in our culture. But the actual working of it, it's a gnarly root over here, and it's an egg over here, and you just do the work.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the mountains, the mountain life. I grew up in the city, so I know nothing about mountains. Other than, and I've been thinking and remembering, you know, because my sister lived in Mount Airy. Mayberry, Mount Airy.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah,
and
Mount Airy.
She lived there for about 10 years, and I visited a couple times. And the last time I visited, I was there for a month. And you know what I saw? Not only the Blue Ridge Mountain that is breathtaking, but I saw the lights. I saw the lights.
Oh, aren't they magical?
And I was like, are there cars? And the person that was hosting us, she's like, no, they're not cars. We don't know what it is. But I was like, oh, my God. And I was there like a whole moon cycle. So I got to see the full moon over the mountains. And,
oh,
God. It was just wonderful. And when I went there, because city folk, you know, we think we're better than anybody. And I grew up in the city, so, you know, I don't believe in fairies because, you know, come on, fairies, really, seriously? I'm a pagan. I'm a polytheist. I'm an animist. I believe in all the Aztecs, gods and goddesses and myths. But, you know, fairies, come on. That's where I draw my line. So I go to North Carolina, and we're walking around my friend's property, you know, like a mile long little walk path, and a whole bunch of trees are down, and they're doing, you know, the fairy door. And I promise you, without fear, I was just like, okay, if you're here, I am respectfully walking by. And I took a number of photos, and you could see orbs, and you could see all kinds of weird things happening on the photos. But the most important thing is I felt like there was 100 little kids running around my knees. So I came down from those mountains being like, you should never say something that you don't know does not exist. Because the fact that you haven't experienced it doesn't mean that it isn't there. So I came out of that mountain a believer, you know, and enamored of the mountains. And how far is Mount Airy from Asheville?
Oh, not far at all. A couple of hours. And that's just because some of the roads are small. But it's not far at all. Did you get to see Pilot Mountain?
Yes.
The one it's like a big stone face.
Yes. Passed by it, never went up to the like little visiting area, but we drove by a couple times. I have like a million pictures of it from the highway. But experience the rain and the frogs and all of this thing. I mean, my sister, we grew up in the city, and my sister was there for like 10 years, and she was in love with it. And I'm like, but we grew up in the city, like, what's wrong with you? And she's like, look at the trees. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see how, you know, it's just, I have, I'm the one pagan with an insect phobia. So I don't do that well.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is truly an insect phobia. And of course, I think one of the animals that communicates with my spirit is the spider. So go figure.
Well, I love insects, but I confess that I have arachnophobia. So it takes a lot for me to interact with a spider of any kind.
Yeah.
But yes, like you, I do my best.
Yeah, I respect them, but I, from this distance here in Chicago. and when sowing time comes around here in Chicago, you know, there's a lot of spiders, and where I live, there's a bunch of trees, and they're close to the side of the buildings. It has a name, but I can't remember. A siding. It's called siding. They hide on the sidings, and they web their web from the trees to the side of the buildings. And sometimes you just walk by, and you know, I just start karate chopping everything, and it's just it's quite an adventure.
Well, that would be funny to see across the street, to see you just start karate chopping.
Mm-hmm.
What is she doing? What's that crazy lady doing over there?
Is the nature lover that's phobic of insects and spiders? That's what it is. Tell us about this book. How long did it take you to? I think to decide to write it must have been a lifetime love. But how did you get inspired? I mean, how wouldn't you be inspired? But how were you inspired to write this book?
Well, it's kind of a weird story because I had already written two books on Appalachian folk magic. The first one is called Stobs and Ditchwater. You mentioned that before. And the second one is called Asphidity and Madstones. And then I went on to write about health and loving your body to good health. Then I wrote the book on Tower Time. And I was gearing up to do a book on permaculture and animism, with a focus on animism as an economic and political force. So I was like, yep, so I've written about this thing that I practice, and I, of course, continue to practice it, but I pretty much thought I'd written everything I was going to write about it. And then I got a phone call from an editor at Llewellyn who said, we'd like a book on this, and I told them you're the only person who could write it. And I was like, what? Oh, well, okay, challenge accepted. So what I wanted to do was to write something new about something that's so old. And it really gave me a chance to go back to beginner's mind and think about how this affected me early in my life and how it affected me now. So it gave me a chance to reconstruct and to just reintegrate myself into it. And it was so good. That was so good for me and so healing for me. Because there are things about this culture that are not good, as there are about every culture. So I didn't want to write a book that talked about, you know, how sweet and wonderful my culture is. I wanted to talk about the strength and resilience of the land and the ancient quality of the land and the rivers. So that's what I wanted to focus on. But I ended up talking about cultural stuff anyway. Because how do you not, really?
I mean, it's impossible to separate, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the in-between, and all the liminal spaces. And then the space itself is liminal and magical. And I feel so identified by the earlier part of the book when you say folks who are not from here come here and they feel something. And I'm like, yep, absolutely. It's just, and I don't think it's me because I'm a witch. I think it's just the place, you know, it's just magical. It's ancient, it's old, it's filled with life and color and energy. And
yes,
I don't think there's anything more quintessential representative of the divine, as I choose to call the divine goddess, than mountains. You know, it's mountains. It's just the ancient, the strength, the survival, the what has been the bottom of an ocean and then suddenly just rises up and becomes an island or a mountain or a continent or two tectonic plates that decide to dance and do their thing and then build a Sierra. And my goodness, that is the force of life itself. So there has to be magic
in
there.
Such power. Such power. People were making fun of us. Oh, maybe a year, 18 months ago, we had an earthquake here. And it was like 4.1. And all my friends in California are like, call me when you have a real earthquake. And I said, look, you don't understand. These mountains are some of the oldest mountains in the world. These plates aren't supposed to be shifting. They shifted. They did their thing. And now they're not supposed to be doing that. So for us to have something as significant as a 4, that maybe should make everybody a little nervous. Just a little nervous.
Yeah. Coming from Mexico
Mama's
City.
Not done with us.
Yep. And I should say, coming from Mexico City, I would have made the same joke, actually. And thank you for pointing that out and make me think, because next time I made a joke like that, I will think about like how it shouldn't be happening. I mean, Mexico, we get 7s and up, you know. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's
terrible.
It is. They're devastated. And but it is exactly what you said. You know, this shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't be shifting. This was supposed to be still. And all the things we're doing to the earth, you know, and the naysayers that are like, oh, what climate change? And I'm like, I just lay on my arms and I'm like, look around. You know,
look what just happened in Texas.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And look what's happening right now in Australia, where everything is flooded on the same place where it was burning last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mother Nature's not happy. I mean, the volcano erupting in Iceland right now. Right now.
Mm-hmm.
So she is a powerful and beautiful and wonderful mother, this wonderful planet of ours. But we don't control her any more than we control our own biological mothers.
Can't control a woman. No. Speaking of mothers, you reference to your ancestors a lot in your book, Grandma, Stories of Grandma, Stories of Mom. What is one that perhaps didn't make it to the book, but is one of your cherished ones? From mom or grandma, can you share one that maybe didn't make it to the book?
Yeah, and I still feel grief about this. She was my father's mother, so she's my Granny Ballard, and I just didn't know her very well. And when we were kids, we spent time with my mother's mother, but we didn't spend much time with my father's mother. For a lot of really kind of sad, twisty reasons, some resentment he had as the only boy in a great big family of girls, and he didn't feel that he was necessary because all the girls took care of everything. And so I just never spent much time with her. And when I did, she didn't know who I was. She would say, whose are you? And I would tell her my dad's name, and she would go, oh, yeah, that's right. So because she had tons of grandchildren and tons of daughters, so she never really knew me. And she died while I was in graduate school. So I didn't ever have the chance to kind of get back home and go, you know what, I need to have a relationship with this woman. Because she is my father's mother. I need to know her. But I don't. I only know her now because I do some genealogy, play around with genealogy stuff. I only know her through that. I mean, I know her ancestral line probably better than she ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And it tracks back to the 8th century.
Wow.
To a woman who was the mother of a Danish king. And I never knew this woman. I never knew her. So isn't that sad?
It is sad.
There was a missed opportunity.
It's amazing how some records can be kept, you know, and it's a true gift for those who can actually trace their ancestry like that. unfortunately, not many folks have that fun ability, you know, to do that. But it is so cool when people can connect with the place, with the ancestor, with the people that came from wherever they came from. But what about those that cannot trace that far back? What will you say to those folks that cannot reconnect with, because, you know, like me, I came from Mexico and I'm leaving no roots on this world. I have no descendants. So there is, like, really my line ends with me. But for those who came kind of like me or any other way of people that came from far lands and there's no records, how do you connect with the land?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think about people who came here enslaved from Africa, and they were given new names or numbers. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really hard to track that back. But it's the blood that speaks to us. So you may not know, and I tell this to people who are adopted people, that you actually get more ancestors because you have the ancestors of your beloved family line, and then you have blood ancestors too, and you don't have to know their names to be able to connect with them. So you can think about my great-grandmother, and if you know who your great-grandmother was, you can get an idea of what the culture was. Like, my family's been here in the mountains, and a lot of them have been very poor, so I can get a sense of my great-grandmother, or let me say great-great-grandmother, because some of my great-grandmothers, I knew one of them very briefly, and then the others I know by reputation, so the stories came down about them. But if mm-hmm. you don't have the stories, you still have the bloodline, and I encourage people all the time to, if you have an ancestor that you knew and loved who is now, and however you express the afterlife, gone to the summer lands or past the veil or gone to heaven, if you have somebody that you know that you loved who is now there on the other side of that veil, connect with them first. Reestablish contact. And I've been trying to do that with that grandmother that I never really knew, is to establish contact with her as a spirit being so that mm-hmm. I can have that sense of connection. I think for some people, ancestor stuff just comes up and presents itself to them. And then mm-hmm. they just have to know.
I agree with that because, you know, how many people are, as you say, you know, adopted or they have no root or they have no records. And a lot of people who are immigrants, like from Mexico, Central or South America, come here with no identifications, no documentation, or they are fleeing for their life, so they have to, like, invent a new persona, and that becomes their personality, and they become them, and then it's hard to trace back when you're hiding and running from your life.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is a new story, it's a new seed that is planted, and you have the ones that you belong to and the ones that claim you, I guess. Right? Like,
well, my husband's Italian, and his parents are the first generation born in this country. So his grandparents didn't speak any English, and his parents only spoke Italian when they didn't want the kids to know what they were saying. So as a result, my husband's generation, none of them learned Italian, but they were immersed in Italian culture, so much so that there's a huge difference for them between Neapolitan, which is one side of the family, and Sicilian, which is the other side of the family. So people that I meet who are from Sicily, they don't call themselves Italian, they call themselves Sicilian. And if you are talking to Italians now, they will tell you what part of Italy they come from. They're not just Italian. They are Neapolitan, they are from Milan, they are Romans. So it starts to break down in these small interlocking circles of culture. And his family came here because their lives had been devastated in Italy. So mm-hmm. they didn't want to think about the culture in Sicily because the mother had died, the father had remarried, the children had been scattered through orphanages and had been, you know, not treated well. And So they finally got enough money and came over here so young, fleeing for their lives and hoping to make a new life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that used to be the glory of this country, is that we were the shining city. Mm-hmm. Give us, you're tired, you're poor, you're huddled messes, you're needing to breathe free.
It's so valuable that you mentioned that, because some folks that look like me and come from Central South America or Mexico, which is North America, for those who don't know. And then some
still
people...
North America.
I have been asked, but you're from South America, right? And I'm like, I'm from Mexico. Yeah, that's South America. And I'm like, nope, that's North America. Yep. I promise you, this is a true story. This is a true story. You're not American. I am. My father's father. I mean, we are from the American continent, you know. But anyway, what I was trying to say is, it's so good that you mentioned that, because when people ask, so why you come for the States? Why you come to the States? Oh, yeah, for the same reason that your great-grandparents and your great-great-grandparents and everybody else. And, you know, we are all trying. We are all moved by the same pulsations, the same needs to be free and to be seen and to be able to live a life without having to look over your shoulder every 2 minutes. Speaking of migration, have you heard of the Apalachalatinos?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we have lots of different kinds of Latinos. So, and I think it's not unique to this part of the world, but so often that first generation comes in and they are the restaurateurs. And I say this about, we had a terrific Chinese restaurant here in town, and the woman who we all knew and loved who ran the restaurant, Mrs. Lee, she had a stroke, and her daughter came in from Boston, and she was going to run the restaurant long enough for her mother to get back on her feet so she could do it. And as it turned out, her mother was not ever going to be able to do that again. So it was her job to dissolve the restaurant and you know, take care of the staff and all of that. So she was just getting everything sorted. And we went there to have our last meal and to say goodbye to all of them and, you know, hugs and kisses, all that stuff. And we said, oh, we hate to see the restaurant close. And this woman, because she's the second generation in the country, and she said, well, I mean, I'm a brain surgeon in Boston. I can't stay down here and run a restaurant.
Yep.
And we see that happen again and again. So the first generation is the restaurateur. And that, the thing about food is that is such a beautiful commonality. And you make friends with food. And so people who would poo-poo another culture, if they just met them on the street maybe, but you go into the hospitality of a restaurant and you eat somebody else's food, and suddenly we are all family.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. But yes, tons of Latinos here. In fact, my brother years ago worked for a big greenhouse, and they brought in some. And I think they were from Mexico. I'm not absolutely sure. Young Mexican men. And so the young Appalachian men and the young Mexican men were working together, and they were eyeballing each other like, I don't know that I like you. I don't know. I don't know. Then they all came together one Friday afternoon after work, and everybody brought beer. Mm. And all the rednecks, regardless of skin tone, drank beer together, and then it was okay.
Yep. That's the universal language of let's kick it.
Yeah, exactly.
You open the beer and that's like, oh yeah, beer, okay, yes, cerveza, yeah, okay, sí. Vámonos. I love about the book also how you take us into, I love that you speak Latin, thank you, because my middle name is Sophia, just so you know. And
I will start calling you Madame Wisdom.
Thank you very much. I love to find out about the book. And, you know, my mom had this fixation with the names of the last two daughters. And one is Taide Olimpia, And the other one is Laura Sophia. So it's like, okay, thank you, Ma. I am so happy
beautiful.
With my name. Yep. Never change my name. Never will. I don't use Sophia as much, but, you know, I probably should. Anywho, back to the book. I love how you spell it out literally for us to learn the Latin name of the herbs and the things that were used in, and how do you explain how to read the names and how you took us into this little adventure with every little herb that you talk about in the book. I mean, it is so amazing because it's not only a book about medicine and magic and learning things, but it's also a reference book. I mean, I haven't seen anybody else.
It's so important. It's so important that you know the botanical, the Latin name for these plants, because otherwise you'll be like me, and I was in Michigan, and I pointed at something, and I said, oh, that is, and I used the common name that we use here for it. And somebody said, no, it isn't. It's, and they use their common name for it. And I said, ah, but is it Pseudomyphalum obtusifolium? And they said, yeah, that's what it is. So once we got down to its Latin roots, we both knew it was the same plant, but it was like, no, it's not. That's not what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to know. Good to know. And I love to go to new places and see what kind of plants they have that I don't know.
And to be immersed on what is blooming or growing or dying in which season. In which place? I mean, it goes to back to permaculture and sustainability, as you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it does. Well, I have a mild allergy to oak pollen, and my joke about that is that the oak trees know that I love them so much they want me to have their babies. So
up my
nose goes all the pollen, down my throat goes all the pollen. So I had endured it here in my homeland. This is like 2 years ago, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago. And so I blew my nose a lot, and it was all fine. And then I went to speak at an event that was in Maryland like 2 weeks later, 2 or 3 weeks later. And for a second I thought, oh, I'm getting a cold. And then I looked around and I saw daffodils. And I thought, no, I bet the oaks are blooming. And I looked around. Sure enough, it was the oak pollen. And then like a month later, I was at Circle for Beltane.
Mm-hmm.
And I got off the plane and got settled in and all that stuff. And my nose was doing the same thing. And I thought, oh, no, because I was in the airport. Did I get a cold? What's going on? And then I saw the daffodils blooming. And I went, damn it, it's the oak pollen again. I get 3 times for the oak pollen this year. Ah.
Wow.
So I did a lot of nose blowing. But it shows you how the zones work. The farther north I go, the I'm likely to encounter those things that I thought I left behind 6 weeks ago. What's going on?
It loves you so much, it followed you around.
It wants me to have babies with it, but I cannot. It's not possible.
Sorry. Different species. I did took a little bit of your book, and I made it public. I quote you. I put your name under it, of course. I love this. No magic. This is from the book, folks. No magical system is foolproof, and no magic work could perfectly adapt at all times in all ways. It's good for us to know that we are not the most powerful force in the universe. It keeps us appropriately humble and allow us to try again. You broke my heart. No, I'm kidding. I love that.
Aww.
I love that. Why
I think
is
it's important
it...
to remember it.
Yes. And, you know, there might be those who think, oh, but yes, I am the almighty and powerful. No, you're not. You could be as powerful as you can be, but you are not the mountain. You are just as valuable as the mountain, but you're not the mountain.
Well, and I think we have both encountered people in our communities who, they put on a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And they might get a lot of followers and a lot of people very impressed with what they do. But if you're looking for a powerful practitioner, a learned practitioner, go look at that quiet person over in the corner. that person who doesn't feel like they need to brag about what they do because mm-hmm. they're so good. They can be humble. And that's a
yep.
mark. That humility is a mark of being so deeply connected to the universe that we know what our place is.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both know people like that.
Oh, yeah.
The people that if we got in big trouble, that's exactly who we'd call. We wouldn't
mm-hmm.
call that fancy person with, you know, whatever beautiful, the joke I make about it is with the pentacle the size of a salad plate. We don't call that person. We call the person with the dirty hands.
mm-hmm. I was thinking of us this morning, of you and I, because we have, and by no means I'm comparing myself to you because I look up to you, but so many common places, you know, and I think it has to do with the culture of self-made witch, if you will. I think I just created that
mm-hmm.
term, but anyway.
I think you did. Patent that.
Patent that. Self-made
trademark
witch.
That right now.
Yep.
Write
yep.
a book. That, there's the book title for you, self-made witch.
My book title, when the book title comes and becomes a reality, is going to be You're a Witch, Act Like One. That is my phrase. That will go.
I love it.
That is going to go on my headstone. Because, Myra, when I said that to certain people, as a accountability is a thing, you are the witch. You cannot let the world walk all over you. You're a witch. Act like one. What I got in return was, but I'm not as powerful as you are. And I'm like, no, you are more powerful than I am. You are as powerful as you are. And I got all kinds of slash back from it. And I'm like, uh-uh. The more you fight me and me telling you that you are a witch and you're supposed to act like one, the more I'm going to keep telling you, you are a witch. Act like one. Get that power back.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
From wherever you have given it away. And so when we were talking with some folks who speak Spanish and are witches with, you know, the big salad plate pentacle, I used to say these are the words in which we are looking to see who has the largest athame or the deepest cauldron. It's not about that. So this morning I was making some mojo bags for a client, and my table is, you know, dinner remnants from last night, my herbs for this mojo bags, my, you know, literally bag of tricks. And I was like, yep, this looks like a working witch kitchen. I'm proud of it. You know, it's not bells and whistles like you see on Witch Talk and Instagram. And there's nothing wrong with the young people, with the new people. There's nothing wrong with seekers.
No.
But I really appreciate that a witch who knows her thing says, we are not the almighty. Coming from you.
Yeah.
The newer generations and everybody in between, we need to hear that. We need to hear that.
And we need to remember that, you know, the universe and just the universe that is our planet, there's so much to discover and so much to explore. If we can just stop arguing with each other for 5 minutes, 5 minutes is all I ask. But
yep.
I'm a big defender of the TikTok witches. And the reason why is this. Because when I was coming up, we did the same stupid stuff. But we did not have a social media platform so that 10,000 people saw us do the same stupid stuff. Because witchcraft is experiential. And it's trial and error. And I could not begin to tell you how many times, with the best intention and with a lot of pre-thought, I did something that was a total disaster, but
yeah.
I didn't do a video of it and show it to all my followers. You know, I was just in the backyard at my grandma's house.
Yeah.
So, we all do crazy things figuring out what power is.
I am all for
figuring out what our connections are.
Look, I'm all for beginners. If there were no beginners, I would have nobody to teach. And
yes.
90% of my time goes to teaching, remunerated or otherwise, I'm always teaching. So I'm all for learners. I'm all for seekers. I would never, you know, belittle anybody because I had to start somewhere, and I started the same way as you just described, making potions to kill. Of course, I'm going to have to finish my thought. I was making potions to kill worms because, you know, the phobia and living in the city, and I wanted to kill the very ones that you were describing in the book, the ones with the seven rings. I was trying to make a potion to kill those guys. Oh, my God. I should.
You didn't make a video. You did not make a video on TikTok so that everybody could be like, what is she trying to do? Oh, my gosh. What are we going to do about this?
I do you one better. I come to my podcast and I tell you about it. But anyway, we all have to remember that we all have to start somewhere, and that is very good that a person who is ahead of us for a mile or 200, you know, knows and reminds us that, you know, we are not the almighty. We are not the, I just love the humbling thought of, and if you think about deity as mom and dad, there are times when mom and dad say no.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And that's for your good.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, mostly it is. Sometimes they do it because it's arbitrary because they never got to do it. My dad never had a fast sports car, and he bought me a Camaro when I was in high school. And then he said, no, but don't drive it fast. And I was like, Dad, you gave me a car. And you want me to drive 35 miles an hour all the time? What, are you crazy? So, don't drive fast in this car. It's like the best handling car I ever had in my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, mostly our parents are doing it. They're doing it because they've got their eye on us and they want us to live to be adults. They really do.
Yeah. To live a long life and to be happy and to make sure you don't run out of time and you do all the things that you have to do. And, you know, to not
give a hoot. But don't you still think of yourself as a student, too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nature teaches me every corner I learn something new. And I think... I just posted on my Facebook a couple of days ago. My goal is to learn something new every day, and I think so far so good. Knock on wood, you know. Like, I have just read all this book called Roots, Branches, and Spirits, and I have learned a whole bunch of things. Speaking of what I've learned,
and now you're going to practice your candy magic.
I'm going. Oh, I love the dead weight. I love that. I love. I mean, we keep giving you folks a little bit of a teaser because, of course, I'm not going to spoil the book for all of you. But please go buy this book wherever books are sold. But why don't we let you tell folks where to buy this book?
Oh, well, I'm happy to report that the book is back in stock because, to my absolute delight, it sold out at the publisher on its release date. Every copy was gone. But now it's back in stock. But if you order the book from my local independent bookstore, which is called Malaprops, MALAPROPS, Bookstore Cafe, if you order it through them, I can sign it for you. Because they'll give me a call. They're right downtown. They're like, I don't know, 15 minutes walking from me. And I am happy to go down there and sign the book for you. Otherwise, get it wherever you usually get books. I'm always going to recommend you go to an independent bookstore because they are the juiciest, sexiest, best bookstores in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
But, I would love for you to have this book and to tell me what you think of it and tell me if it changes what you thought Appalachia was. and is.
Definitely.
Because that's part of what I'm doing too.
Don't be watching no movies made by Hollywood that will tell you what it's not. Just like those movies made by Hollywood will tell you what a witch is not or a Mexican is not.
Right. Or a Mexican is not, yeah.
Yeah, learn on your own.
I didn't know you were from Mexico City. It is like the most exciting city in the world.
It is. It is.
And the food is amazing.
Oh, my God.
Let's go.
So delicious. Let's do it. It's, I have
Let's
said
go.
This before.
Witches to Mexico.
When I go back into the universe as a soul, my body has to be cremated. I need five folks that are, well, at least three of them are willing to be arrested because I want to rest in five places. I want to rest under the bean here in Chicago. I want to rest on the ocean in Acapulco, Mexico with my mom. I will rest at Circle, of course. I will have a headstone there. And I want to rest in another two places that are in Mexico. One is on, it's called Teotihuacan. And there is an avenue that is called the Avenue of the Dead. So you need to sprinkle me there. Because it's called Avenue of the Dead. That's where I need to go. But the fifth place is the one that you might or might not get arrested. And it's on the pyramids that are in the heart of the center of Mexico City. And I need you to have a little sip look back and go, oops. That's where I want to go. And it needs to be done like that.
All up and down my back and across my shoulders when you said that.
Yep. Think about it. Little sip look back. You open it and you go, oops. And I want whoever does it, I want them to say, oops. You know, like I dropped something like, oops. That's what I want. Hopefully within many, many years. Speaking of
many years ahead.
Many books that we have to write and many things that we have to learn and some others that we get to share. And what a pleasurable and what a humble and beautiful vocation of sharing what you know. You have more books coming up this year.
I do. I have a book on animism, permaculture, the Wheel of the Year that will be out from Wiser in August at La Maslunasa. And it is the book of my heart, where that is a love song to the universe.
Oh, can't wait for it. What's the title again?
It is called Seasons of a Magical Life. And what it encourages, the whole point is to encourage people who are in earth-based religions to actually deepen their spirituality by contact with the earth. I know it's a shocking idea. Following the seasons of the agricultural year will put you in deeper contact with your spiritual stuff. It just will.
Mm-hmm. It will. You know, my favorite part of being a pagan is the wheel. Is that every 40 or so days we get to start over.
Yeah. Do you do any interfaith work? Because I can remember talking about holy days in this interfaith gathering. And I said, imagine it's like having Passover or Easter every 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the clergy they were appalled. They were, how do you survive that? Oh my God, that just sounds like too much. And I went, no, it's not. And then in between that, we have dark and new moon and full moon.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing it all the time.
Yep. Yeah, but it's being exactly attuned with nature. It is like spring came and we're like, yay! And even though people shouldn't, in my humble opinion, be walking around without masks yet.
No.
We all are happy. Spring. And I don't think there was ever a spring more needed than the spring of 2021. I think this spring
and more welcome
is a lifesaver for the whole planet, literally, or autumn for the south, of course. But this spring for us here in the northern hemisphere, I think it was like, are we gonna make it? And I say this with all humble respect for those who unfortunately didn't. So many souls that are not here with us, but the ones who are here, we ought to live. We are alive for a reason, and we ought to live and enjoy.
Yes.
And enjoy the seasons.
And I hope that we will take that message, that we will take that into our hearts, that there are 500,000 and counting people who are not here to enjoy the spring. And so we can enjoy that for them.
And to honor them.
We can hold them close to us. Yeah.
Yeah. Time is upon us. It's 8 o'clock. Can you believe that?
How do we do this?
Because when you're having fun. It must be the Iron Cast.
And we promise.
I would say the Iron Cast pan behind us in your kitchen that rubs all the time.
Oh, I hope I get to see you soon with or without a mask.
Right, and that we can hug again, and you know, patience, my earthlings, just patience, please. The time will come where we can all celebrate once again. Please go to www.myvillagewitch.com for all things Byron Ballard. She's also on Facebook. She's also on Instagram. Are you on Twitter as well?
Twitter. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I kind of love Twitter because I can use bad language there.
You can use bad language wherever you want, but I know what
I
you're
know,
saying.
But on Twitter, it seems to be okay. I don't like to do that too much on Facebook.
You know, I try not to on my podcasts. I don't know if you notice. Everywhere else I do it, but not on the podcast. So if you only know me from the podcast, whenever you meet me in person, oh my God!
They're talking to like somebody who lives in Chicago.
Well, heck yeah! You know, and it won't be heck. I want to say two things before we have to go. A, thank you so much for being on this show. You are truly an inspiration for witches, pagans, and magical folks all around. Starting with me. You inspire me greatly. And B, I want to say goodbye tonight to you with a song that was composed by a friend of ours named Lou Garou. Interpreted, however, by Krista Chapman, who made a wonderful rendition of none other than Lilith. Before we sign us up off of the show, why don't I leave you the microphone so you can say goodnight to your audience?
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for being here. I think we were just silly enough and serious enough tonight. And I want to say to you, thank you. And also, ciao, bella Sofia.
Oh, prego,
thanks.
Prego. No, grazie, grazie. See? I gotta do it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Byron.
And much Thank love you. To you, my friend.
Much love to you. Much love to everyone listening live or listening later. Please don't forget to subscribe to CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Thank you for the people who are listening live and they are here in the chat. And thank you to Krista Chapman for letting me play her music. And thank you for Louis Garou for writing such a wonderful song. And to every single one of you, never forget that you are loved. Good night.
Rise up, Lilith, rise up, away from God, away from man. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, you took your freedom, you took a stand. You said I bow to no man and I will lie beneath no man. I refuse to take his orders, you spread your wings and you flew away. damn the man and damn the God to their hell of smoke and flame. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, you're needed here today. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, away from God, away from man. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, you took your freedom, you took your stand. You refuse his subjugation, and for this sin you've been damned. The truth is you were never wrong, now we all understand. Resistance to the patriarch is strong and on the rise. I see women all around me, and I can see you in their eyes. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, away from God, away from man. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, you took your freedom, you took a stand. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, away from God, away from man. Rise up, Lilith, rise up, you took your freedom, you took a stand. Rise up, women, rise up, you took your freedom. Take a stand.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.